is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, hello everybody, and good to be with you again. Another great week. I'll tell you what, every time we have a weekend like, even this whole week really here in Florida, it's just such a beautiful week in terms of weather. And then I'm reading on the internet, all my friends up in Chicago are posting that the wind chill is 6, 7, 8 degrees below zero. Man, did I make a good decision getting out of there. Hey, if you're just tuning in, my name is Jim Paris. I'm the editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. And we get together, we do the program live every Sunday night at 9 o'clock Eastern. If you're listening at a different time, we do replay the program at different times throughout the week. We also have available our 24-hour stream, which is at JimParisRadio.com, JimParisRadio.com. And this show, along with three other podcasts that I produce every month, are all available for download over at iTunes. And you can get the links to the iTunes pages by going to ChristianMoney.com. And then at the very top there in the menu, you'll see a podcast link. We've got a great program lined up for you tonight. My guest is Alan Collinge, and he's the founder of an organization called Student Loan Justice. And we're going to be talking about something fascinating. And this is a topic that for a lot of people is a little bit of an uncomfortable topic, because we've all been told that we should go to college, and if we go to college and get a college education, that we're going to have a better life, we're going to have better job opportunities, we're going to earn more money. And that is probably still true to some extent, but the big shadow, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, are the student loans now that people have. And we're talking about young people getting out of college, 21, 22 years old, with six figures. Yeah, $100,000 in some cases more than that, in student loan debt. Money that our guest tonight says will probably never be able to be paid back. And here's some interesting statistics for you. The amount of debt right now in student loans is $1 trillion. That's more than the total amount of U.S. credit card debt. Can you believe that? These numbers are just staggering when you think about this. We're going to be talking about this tonight with our guest. He'll be with us in just a few minutes. Some of the things that you might not know about student loan debt, that you can't write off your debt in bankruptcy, that there is no statute of limitations on student loan debt, you have no protection under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Student loan lenders are not required to follow the fair lending compliance requirements. Really shocking stuff, and our guest, Alan Collinge, founder of Student Loan Justice, will be with here in just a couple of moments to talk about this. And if you're listening right now and you want to get on the line, we are going to take some calls tonight for our guest. You can call now or you can write the number down and call a little bit later, but the toll-free number is 888-287-3316. That's 888-287-3316. And I've got a few quick items here to go over before we bring our guest on. Did you see this in the news? Casey Anthony, it was announced over the weekend, has now filed for bankruptcy, claiming a total amount of assets of about $1,100. Wow, what a weird twist of fate. I was one of those that thought that Casey Anthony was going to end up somehow as a multimillionaire after that whole episode with her daughter dying and who knows what really happened. And, you know, I think we all have our suspicions, and many people thought she was going to end up getting some kind of a big movie deal or a book deal. And apparently she did, you know, sell pictures and different things along the way and did make money, but I guess a lot of that went to the lawyers. I don't know. But I thought it was interesting today. It was in the news over the weekend. Casey Anthony, bankrupt. And, of course, if you don't live here in Central Florida like I do, the Casey Anthony story may not be as big of a deal to you as it is to us here in Florida. But there was a period of about 2 years where our local TV stations basically shut down and became 24-hour Casey Anthony coverage. I kid you not. And that's about to happen here shortly with the George Zimmerman trial, which I understand is supposed to happen in the next maybe a couple of months. George Zimmerman will go on trial, and that will turn Central Florida back into another OJ spectacle, just like we had with Casey Anthony. So we'll see what happens with all of that. Hey, big announcement. I am officially booked on the Coast to Coast AM show with George Norrie. I'll be on tomorrow night. That's Monday night at 10 p.m. Pacific. Now, this is where it gets tricky because it's technically not Monday night if I give you the Eastern time zone time. So you got to follow me on this. So it's Monday night. It's 10 p.m. Pacific time. Or if you're on the East Coast, it's actually 1 a.m., which clicks it over into Tuesday morning, right? But we'll just call it Monday night at 1 a.m. just to keep our scorecard straight. I've never been on with George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. I'm excited to be on, and I'll be talking about my brand new book, How to Pray for a Financial Miracle. And I'll be on during that first hour only. They've got another guest for the remainder of the show, but I'll be on during that first hour, Coast to Coast AM. If you're interested in, and so many people over the years ask me, Jim, how can I do what you're doing? I want to learn how to get a website going. I want to learn how to get a blog going. I want to learn how to make money on the internet. And for those of you that don't know that, I do earn my full-time living from the internet. This live show is just one of many things that I do to create content, as we call it. And that includes videos and audios and written content and websites and blogs. And we teach this in an online school that we have, and we do offer from time to time a free introductory workshop on how all of this online income stuff works. And if you want to join us, our next free online workshop is this Tuesday night. So all you've got to do if you want to sign up for that is go to the website jimsfreetraining.com and just share with us your first name and your email address, and you will get all of the information. We do have space Tuesday night on this intro webinar for up to 250 people. So, and I think we're getting pretty full, so you might want to go over there ASAP, jimsfreetraining.com. Also, another way that you can help support the show is by shopping at amazon.com. And we've been mentioning this, and it's really been paying off, and we thank you so much. All you've got to do is, instead of going to amazon.com, just type in your browser, shop.christianmoney.com, shop.christianmoney.com. If you get to Amazon that way, then Amazon will pay us a percentage of everything that you buy. How cool is that? So write that down, bookmark it, make a little yellow sticky, put it on the corner of your computer monitor, and just remember, you can help us out the next time you're planning on buying something over at Amazon by getting there, navigating by going to shop.christianmoney.com. Also, a fascinating article that this was brought to my attention by my business partner, Bob Yetman, and you can find this on my Twitter feed, twitter.com/James L. Paris. There is something called the Better Than Cash Alliance, and one of its members is Bill Gates. And I guess a bunch of these billionaires and millionaires have gotten together and decided that we probably don't need to have cash anymore. We need to go to a cashless society. And for those that are Christians, we all know what that means. Mark of the Beast, Book of Revelation. Check this article out. I think you'll find it chilling when you read it. We have a link to it. It is over on my Twitter feed, twitter.com/James L. Paris. Now, a lot of you have asked me, how can you connect with me on Facebook? Well, I'm not a big celebrity yet, like the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs, so you can still be my personal friend on Facebook. And if you want to just be a personal friend, quote-unquote, and get in touch with me via my personal Facebook page, you can do that by going to facebook.com/James L. Paris. Real easy, that's my name, facebook.com/James L. Paris. If you want to go to my fan page for our ChristianMoney.com website, it's pretty easy to remember that. If you want to like our fan page, just go to facebook.com /James L. Paris, the number one. So James L. Paris, one. So it's either /James L. Paris for the personal page or /James L. Paris, one for the ChristianMoney.com page. One last thing before we bring on our guest. We did post an article this week, which we've gotten a lot of feedback from this. You can get the article by going over to blog.christianmoney.com. Many of you hear the ad on radio, incomeathome.com. Make money working from your kitchen table. You've heard all of that. Well, we found the story fascinating when it came out that in December, a major hedge fund manager has actually made a $1 billion, with a B, a $1 billion bet against this income at home company. He did this by selling their stock short. $1 billion with a B. It's a fascinating story. If you want to find out more about it, it involves some of the biggest names in talk radio are promoting this incomeathome.com. We actually, in the story, reveal who the company is behind Income at Home. We actually reveal in the story how much people are really making. And we get into this whole $1 billion short sale of their stock. It's a fascinating story. We invite you to go take a look at it over at blog.christianmoney.com. Well, it's time to say hello to our guest. His name is Alan Collinge, and he's the founder of Student Loan Justice. And you can find his website, studentloanjustice.org. And some things that you should know, right now in the United States, there is more than $1 trillion in student loan debt. Now, that means that there's more student loan debt than all of the credit card debt combined. And if you have a student loan, you're not going to be able to get rid of it in bankruptcy. There is no statute of limitations, so you can't wait 5 or 10 years and the debt goes away, like with every other kind of debt. There is no Fair Debt Collection Practices Act that would apply, so that means they can call you at work, they can call you at home, they can call your neighbors, they can call you 30 times in the day. You can't invoke Fair Debt Collection Practices. And they're not required to comply with the fair lending requirements either, which means that all those laws and rules that would give you full and fair disclosure when you signed up for a loan, you don't get that either. It may seem like a racket. In fact, the name of the book is The Student Loan Scam, and its author, Alan Collinge, is with us. Alan, welcome to the Jim Paris Program.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's really good to be here, and I'm glad you're paying attention to this very important topic.
Yeah, we're glad to have you with us. And, you know, let's start at the beginning. We're all told when you get out of high school, if you don't want to be a loser, you go on to college. And, you know, there are different paths that people take, like the community colleges and, you know, maybe using the military as a way to go to college. But then a lot of kids find, hey, I can just go sign some papers and kind of go to these really expensive colleges. One of my daughters almost ended up at a college where it was going to be like $30,000 or $40,000 a year, and she found she could get almost exactly the same education at our local college here, where she could still live at home and all of that. So that was good that we figured that out. But what's wrong with the proposition that if you get a college education, you're going to make a lot more money, have a better job? And so why not just borrow $100,000 and go get that done?
Well, the problem with people who promote the colleges in that way is this. You know, you can take a pool of people and you can say, did you go to college? How much money did you make? Yes or no? And, you know, statistically, yeah, I suppose the data will come out that people who went to college earn more money than those who didn't go to college. But, you know, if you take a poll of people who took piano lessons, for instance, there probably right. would be about the same correlation. And so, you know, colleges, I certainly think higher education is a pretty good thing for most people. But unfortunately, our government has found a way to essentially ruin the entire higher education funding system because of the predatory characteristics that they built into the lending system. So, you know, the old, you know, proverbs of if you borrow money, you should pay it back, and, you know, old adages that make perfect sense, and I agree with them 100%. they really almost don't apply here, Jim, because, I mean, as you said, almost all students are pushed pretty strongly, at least, you know, the better students and those who show an interest, they're pushed really hard to go to college. And the way the entrance and registration system has been concocted, you know, actually paying attention to the loan documents is about the last thing that these students would think to do. By the time they've decided to go to one college or another, you know, the decision to take out loans or whatever the financial aid office tells them to do, it's pretty much already been made. And so the actual, you know, reviewing the loans and picking a lender and so forth, that usually doesn't even happen. The students usually just roll right through the registration line, sign whatever is put in front of them, and, you know, with sort of a vague concept that, yes, they are borrowing money to do this. But, you know, the way the loans are sold, it's very deceptive. The schools, unfortunately, have taken pretty bad advantage of the vulnerability of the students and the trust that they put in the schools. And, you know, maybe it wouldn't have been as big of a deal, you know, if these loans were the same as, say, credit card debt or, you know, any standard bank loan. But the fact is, they're just not, for the reasons that you mentioned. You know, student loans are the only type of loan in this country, in fact, in this nation's history, to be specifically exempted from standard bankruptcy protections, statutes of limitations, and I won't repeat the list again. But this is a very unique and sort of astonishing absence. And unfortunately, the students are almost never told about this very peculiar nature of these student loans prior to taking the loans out. They also are not informed by the schools or by the lenders or, quite frankly, by the Department of Education the true risk of these loans. Because it turns out that for years and years and years, the default rate on these student loans were probably around 1 in 4. So about 25% across all, you know, from the truck driving schools.
Really, you're saying one in four students default. I never knew that the rate was that high.
Well, this is going back years and years and years. This is based on a 2003 Inspector General study that looked at students leaving college in 1995. And so, yeah, certainly for the past, you know, 15 years or more, we can say without a doubt that the default rate was about 1 in 4. It may have even been a little bit higher for a while. But it gets worse because today, you know, things are a lot different than they were in 1995. The economy is worse. The colleges and the amount of debt that the students have to assume to make it through is much higher. You know, the job market just isn't what, you know, as I mentioned, the economy is just not that good for recent graduates. So today, in fact, for the past 5 years or so, my best guess, Jim, is that the default rate across all, you know, the large number across all schools, across all students, is probably well over 30% and could even be as much as or even a little bit more than 40%. And again, just like before, the students are never made aware of this fact prior to taking out the loans. And, you know, this really gets to some basic issues of trust in government and trust in the lending institutions and, I'm sorry to say, trust in the colleges. Because, you know, this isn't just a few one-off schools are sort of hiding this information from the students to try, you know, and get a warm body in the chair. This is a systemic, universal omission that is made. And so, you know, I started looking at this because my own personal history, I found that my loans were defaulted despite my, you know, good efforts to maintain them in good stead. And, you know, something smelled pretty rotten. And the more I looked at it, the worse it got. And so pretty quickly, I took my research to Fortune magazine, and they did a really good story where, among other things, they uncovered the fact that some lenders were lending their money out at annual percentage rates, which is a little bit higher than the interest rates. It's the interest rates plus the fees that are expected to accrue over the year, of almost 30%.
Wow. And now, so, you always hear the idea that the student loan rates are going to be, the interest rates are going to be very, very low because you're a student and this is a student loan and the rates are going to be low. But that's not turning out to be the case, is what you're saying.
Well, no. There's two types of loans. There's federal loans that the government either makes or guarantees, and then there's private loans. Well, none of these loans are amenable to bankruptcy laws. But that's pretty much the only thing they share in common. The private loans are essentially like credit cards, where there's no government standing behind them, et cetera. But there are no bankruptcy protections. And for these, for a long time, it was, you know, like the Wild West. The students would be sort of led on by a low teaser rate. You know, as soon as that expired, their interest would go up to 16, 17, 18, sometimes even as much as 21 or 2%. And so, this is very damaging, not only because, you know, it potentially completely wrecks the credit and the future viability of the student, but increasingly, since they removed bankruptcy from private loans in 2005, the lenders have assumed a policy of requiring cosigners, so that's parents or uncles or grandparents, on about 90% of all private loans that go out the door.
So if you get grandma to sign for you, then grandma may not realize this, but I'm reading some stories from your website of elderly people having their homes taken, having their retirement accounts and even Social Security checks taken when these loans end up in default.
That's exactly right. And it's actually not only for private loans. We see it more with private loans, but there are also parent plus loans that the federal government guarantees. And so we're seeing, all of those just horrible outcomes. And, you know, there's just no need for something as cruel as that to be inflicted on our students. You know, I understand a lot of people, they like to sort of talk down to the kids and, you know, assume that sort of paternalistic attitude. And I understand that. But there simply is no reason to destroy a family and, you know, make the kid feel just absolutely worthless and just beyond shame. And at the same time, you know, like you said, grandma and grandpa all of a sudden have to, you know, take a reverse mortgage on their house so they can pay not what the student borrowed, but rather what the student borrowed plus an astonishing amount of interest plus an astonishing amount of fees. You know, it's become
it almost sounds like loan sharks when you get to the bottom of all this. I'm going to break in for a second and give our phone number out. If you're listening and you have a story of your own that you want to share about a student loan situation, maybe you've got a question about a current student loan circumstance, maybe you're planning to get student loans or co-signing for a child or helping a young person get into college. If any of this is resonating with you and you'd like to ask a question to our guest, Alan Collins, he is the founder of Student Loan Justice, and we do have open lines for the balance of the hour. You can call us right now, toll-free, 888-287-3316. You'll give your first name to Joy and your city, and we'll put you on hold, and we'll bring you right on the program, 888-287-3316. Again, 888-287-3316. We also offer the alternative of sending a question in by email if you're listening and you're not in a position that you can make a phone call. We have a lot of people that listen over the computer, Alan, so we'll give them the email address is jim@christianmoney.com if you want to send in your question on student loans to our guest, Alan Collins. The email address is jim@christianmoney.com. And I see we've got at least one caller lined up, but before we get to you, caller, let me ask you what effect all of these easy student loans are having on the cost of college. My son is in college, and the first couple of years when he was a new student, I was very involved, you know, going down there with him to the financial aid office and the tuition people and going through his paperwork. He pretty much handles that all on his own now, but I was pretty amazed at all of the fees that they kept adding. They had like miscellaneous fees for technology for the entire campus. I mean, it was like buying a car, how tricky that they were adding fees on. And my son was shocked that none of these fees were ever disclosed in orientation or when he did his college visit the year before. And how are these loans making the cost go up?
Well, certainly by the mechanism that you just sort of touched on, the fact that the students are in a position of not being able to negotiate, really. And once they've made the decision to go to school, well, they'll sign pretty much whatever is put in front of them. But what is really enabling the inflation is the fact, and this there is a link, a very strong and obvious link, if you look at this problem for any length of time, between the removal of bankruptcy protections and the soaring cost. And the reason is this. It's become more profitable for the lenders, for the guarantors, and for the collection companies, and even for the federal government when student loans default rather than remain in good stead. So even the very tippy top of the, you know, the oversight structure, which is the federal government, even this very highest layer is actually making more money on defaulted student loans than loans that remain in good stead. And they,
now, isn't
they
that the same thing
by,
they went, Alan, isn't that the same thing they just went after all these mortgage companies for, these subprime mortgage companies?
No. I mean, if the Department of Housing, if it turned out the Department of Housing or even, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac had been actually profiting on defaults, people would be getting dragged out of their homes and tarred and feathered. You know, there would be a huge uprisal. I mean, this is an intolerable and indefensible, and it is the epitome of bad governance and bad faith lending. It can't happen, in fact, and any Western economist would be compelled to agree with me.
I'm going to break in here for a second, and we're going to bring a caller on and remind folks, if you want to join us, our guest is Alan Collins. He's the founder of Student Loan Justice. You've got a question about student loans or a problem you're having or you're in default or any of these kinds of things, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316, and we welcome to the program Marie in Los Angeles. Marie, say hello to Alan Collins.
Hi, Alan, and thank you, Jim, for having this topic because it's a very prevalent problem. Everybody I talked to. So, I have a particular question, actually, one for me and one for my son. I'm a teacher, and I have a loan out from having gotten my master's degree. And I've heard of loan forgiveness for teachers. I get these these things in my school email, these marketing things for different, you know, companies. Anyway, but I teach an elective subject. But I've heard that, you know, I've heard through the grapevine. Is it true that if I agree to work in like a disadvantaged area or something, that I could possibly get loan forgiveness?
Now, You would have to check at your with your local school district to see if they have any, or maybe the state of California to see if they have that program. I actually have heard that they do, and I believe that they do, but I haven't checked it out for myself. But there is now a federal program in place for anyone who works at a nonprofit, whether it's a school or a hospital or what have you, where at least on paper. Given that they are accepted into this repayment program, after 10 years of work, the remaining balance on the loan is indeed forgiven. Now,
Alan, who pays for that? That sounds great. Where does the money come from to pay for that?
Well, but see, here, you're right. The federal government is on the hook to pay for this loan forgiveness at the end of the term. But here's what they're doing. I'm quite sure. These are unproven, untested programs. But they were set up by the people at the Department of Education who are all former bankers from, you know, Sallie Mae and other banking interests. And what they do in the private industry is they'll promise, maybe not forgiveness, but they often do promotional gimmicks where, you know, if you maintain on-time payments for a year, then they reduce your interest rate by a couple percent and that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that the way the game is played in private industry, the idea from the point of the lenders is to kick as many people out of those programs as possible. I mean, if they're a day late on the payment, you know, or maybe even if they're not, just sort of hope they don't get mad and catch you if you just sort of kick them out and you. But the point is, come up with any reason as, you know, as lame as it needs to be to justify kicking them out of the program. So in the private industry, only about 15% of the people who try to get these earned benefits end up actually getting them. And by everything that I can tell, all the evidence that I have seen leads me to believe that this is exactly what is going on with the federal government's forgiveness program. And they haven't released any numbers yet, but I would say it's certainly worth looking into if you carry a pretty high amount of debt and if you work at a nonprofit. However, look very carefully and very cautiously.
read the fine print. It sounds like one of those deals. And we're going to let you.
And not only that, but it's a lifelong, or at least as long as the life of the loan is current, it's going to be a monthly struggle to stay on top of the probably the Department of Education is who you will be making your payments to, because they will do everything they can to lose a paperwork, you know, misfile a payment, you know, this and that and the other thing, to disqualify the applicants from the program.
Let's get to Marie's second question. And Marie, let me tell you that if you go to blog.christianmoney.com, that's my main blog site, and if you do a search there for the phrase student loan forgiveness, we did have an article on this a few months ago where we listed all of the different student loan forgiveness programs and links to get to those programs. But good advice from Alan to know what the fine print on those are. Now, you said you had a second question for your son.
Yes.
What is that question?
It has to do with loan forgiveness as well. But he's considering, after he finishes college, going into the military. You know, and they've talked, I guess the recruiters have talked about.
Now my son is considering that as well. And are you asking about, does that get you out of your student loans if you go into the military?
Right. That's not my question.
All right. Marie, we're going to hang up with you. Listen your radio or online stream. Alan, what about these the deal where you can go into the military and all your loans are paid off? Is that for real?
To my knowledge, it's not. I mean, there's the GI Bill, which, as of a long time ago when I was looking into the military myself, there were caps set at about $20,000, if memory serves. Now, I believe that probably has been increased to some extent since then. But I think there is still a cap, and I think that you still have to be very careful about what that cap is. Because as you mentioned, you know, the cost of college has literally, not literally, but it is nearly blown through the roof. It has gone up at double or triple the rate of inflation for the past 30 years, and it's only gotten more expensive quicker over the past 5 or 10 years. And so these are not small amounts of money that you can pick berries over the summer to pay for, like, you know, when our parents were kids. These are very potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt that we're talking about. So before you sign on the dotted line, make sure that, you know, if the recruiter says something that's not clear, and I trust the military more than I trust the Department of Education, but nonetheless, if the recruiter is less than clear, then make sure that you understand and don't And don't just assume that everything will be fine. Because
all right, Alan, what I'm going to do, Alan, I'm going to hang up with you so that Joy can call you back because we're getting some static on the line. If you have the option of a hard landline, that might be better.
I can play with my antenna. I think
and
I
we've got a we've also got a 4-minute break coming up here, so that'll give you a chance to stretch your legs. So I'm going to hang up with Alan, and producer Joy is going to call him back. And we'll get him back on the line and maybe get a little bit of a better phone connection there. And before we go to break, if you have a question you'd like to ask Alan, we do have about 20 minutes left. You can get right on the program with your question by phone, which is 888-287-3316. That's 888-287-3316 for your call for Alan Collins, your question on student loans, 888-287-3316, or you can send your question in by email, jim@christianmoney.com. That's jim@christianmoney.com. We're going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be back momentarily with our guest, Alan Collins. Hi, this is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. If you are interested in learning some new strategies for generating online income, check out my free training schedule at jimsfreetraining.com. That's jimsfreetraining.com. Whether you're just looking for part-time income or to build an internet business that can replace your full-time job, check out this free online workshop coming up this week. Register now at jimsfreetraining.com. The workshops are free, but are each limited to just 250 people. So take a minute now and reserve your space for my next free online workshop. That's jimsfreetraining.com. jimsfreetraining.com. Are you tired of hearing how the economy is doing so badly and how there are no opportunities? This is Jim Paris, and I want to share with you an opportunity that I first learned of a little over a year ago, right here in my own neighborhood. I was out walking my dog and saw someone cleaning a foreclosed house. And I struck up a conversation with them and actually found out that there is a business opportunity of cleaning out foreclosed homes for the banks. And these people don't make pennies. In fact, some of them make as much as $1,000 to $1,500 for one day of cleaning out foreclosed houses. Now, what's really neat about this opportunity is that the foreclosure crisis isn't going anywhere. So this is an opportunity that's going to be around for years to come. It's an interesting business opportunity, one that I think really does deserve your attention. And there's a website that you can go to get all of the details on this opportunity. It's called foreclosurecleaning.us. Now, maybe you want to do this just part-time, maybe just on the weekends or in the evenings. It's an opportunity that is very unique, and with everything that's happening in the economy today, it's something that's actually growing and expanding while many other things are drying up and withering. It's a unique opportunity, one that I think will give you a chance to maybe become self-employed, get out of the rat race, an opportunity to get into a whole new line of work, and it doesn't take very much money at all to start a business like this, and it doesn't take very much training. After all, you're just doing basic cleaning. To find out more about the exploding foreclosure cleaning business, check out the website foreclosurecleaning.us. That's foreclosurecleaning.us. Hi, this is Jim Paris, and I want to share with you something really unique that I ran across recently. It's an idea that I think would be very, very interesting to many of our listeners. How would you like to get paid to travel internationally and actually live in a foreign country for maybe a year or even longer? It's a unique opportunity, and it doesn't take a lot to get involved in this. The opportunity is that of teaching English as a foreign language. Now, I'm going to give you a website here that you can go to get more information on this. It's called makemoneyteaching.us. That's makemoneyteaching.us. Now, at the website, you're going to learn all about a unique opportunity where you can become certified to teach English as a foreign language. Now, you don't have to go back to college, and it won't take you years to get this certification. In just a matter of a few weeks, you can become certified to teach English as a foreign language. There are organizations that will actually pay you and actually pay your transportation costs as well to bring you into a foreign country. And you might live there for a year or longer. Many of the arrangements even include paid housing. Now, if you're someone that doesn't want to travel internationally, you can also take this same training and use this credential to teach right here in the United States or even over the internet using Skype. Take a couple of minutes today and check this out. It's definitely a very interesting opportunity that I think deserves your attention. Again, the website is makemoneyteaching.us. That's makemoneyteaching.us. All right, this is Jim Paris, and we are back live. If you're just tuning in, I'm the editor-in-chief of the website, christianmoney.com, and my guest tonight is Alan Collinge. Alan is the founder of Student Loan Justice. His website is studentloanjustice.org, and we're taking questions for him on the topic of student loans. If you're listening and you'd like to ask a question, the lines are open for you. If you call in, you go right to the top of the line, right to the head of the line. We're going to take as many of these email questions as we can as well. We've got a whole stack of these. But if you call in, you go right to the head of the line with your question. 888-287-3316 is the call-in number. Again, to speak to Alan Collinge about your student loan question, 888-287-3316. And we're going to bring Alan back with us. And I'm told, Alan, that producer Joy has a good connection with you now here. So let's get to some of these email questions here. Somebody writes that they're in default and they want to come out of default and begin making payments again. They're saying here also that they don't even know who owns their loan right now and where they can find that out. Boy, it sounds like a mess.
Yeah, that's very common. I would counsel them to get their feet on the ground, just to understand the bare basics of these loans, because it is a little bit complicated. Go to studentloanjustice.org and push the green button. That's all I have to say, and that'll at least bring them up to speed to a minimal level, so they at least understand the questions like what you just asked, who holds their loans and what the process is. One thing I really do need to say here, though, is that this is one of the many sort of sub scams of the overall problem. When a loan defaults, the guarantors, who are these people that sort of stand behind the government, stand between the government and the lender, they will try very hard using their collection companies and other methods to compel the defaulted borrower to pay them, make on-time payments on this loan for 10 months, none of which goes to the principal or the interest. And then at the end of that process, what the guarantor does is repackages that loan. And it will be, of course, much larger than the loan was when it originally defaulted. And then they will slap additional packaging fees and so forth onto it, and they will sell that loan on either on the open market or directly to the federal government. So from the guarantor's perspective, they really love it. They love defaulted loans because it allows them to take a loan and make it much larger and then sell it and collect 18% commission on that sale after the loan has been quote-unquote rehabilitated. Now, the thing, and I understand that a lot of people need to, maybe they work for the federal government or maybe there's other compelling reasons that they can't have a default on their record, but people shouldn't realize that these loans, once they have been increased and so forth, and they've gone through the process, on average, 60% of these loans default again, a second time.
Really?
So this can very easily turn what started as a $10,000 loan into a $25,000 or $30,000 headache.
Actually, now, Alan, is there anywhere that people can go for help? Like, you hear these ads for these IRS resolution services,
so you owe money to the
IRS. Is there any type of service or lawyer or anything like that that somebody can go to get help with this?
Well, yeah, there is a exploding industry of debt and credit counselors who claim that they can help the borrowers get their loans out of default. But quite frankly, Jim, these people are just sort of yet another person between the borrower and the lender with their handout. There's nothing that these people can do for the borrowers that the borrowers can't do for themselves. Anybody can initiate their own loan rehabilitation. Anybody can negotiate directly with their loan holder.
Is that covered on your website and in your book, like how to handle that kind of a situation?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I wrote a chapter in the book that just sort of gave practical advice. And quite frankly, my advice for defaulted borrowers is that unless you absolutely must have that default off your record, do not pay. It's just not a safe thing to do. Because obviously on average, the average borrower that goes through this is going to wind up defaulting again. And so,
but what, how do you, I mean, you, how do you live? I mean, how do you go forward with that? You've got a student loan that's in default and you kind of try to put your head on the pillow at night to go to sleep, knowing that they could start collection actions and you would possibly face having your wages garnished, having your
right.
bank account seized.
Right.
People have to live under that thread. Maybe somebody says, I don't want to live worried about them knocking at the door or whatever's going to happen, and they want to
sure.
get rid of it. So what do you say to that
and
person?
Right. Well, I trust that people have their own financial interest first and foremost. And
right.
certainly if they can afford to pay the default, then, you know, you probably want to do that. But in most cases, people usually default because they just can't afford the loan. And so it makes absolutely no sense to take a loan that was unmanageable in the first place, you know, maybe even double it with increased fees and packaging costs, and then try the whole process again with a new loan that's so much larger that it's almost inevitable that you're going to...
Is there any hope, Alan, they might forget about you at some point? I mean, maybe it was 10 years ago and it's just sort of sitting out there on your credit as a dead item. Is there
no.
any hope that they'll forget about you?
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, obviously, there's no statute of limitations among the many consumer protections that are absent for student loans. Statute of limitations is not there. And the lenders and the collection companies have gotten really good at keeping the borrowers under pressure to the extent that they can. And with the internet now and Facebook and so forth, it's a lot easier for you guys.
another reason maybe for people not to have a Facebook account. I want to hit some of these other questions here that people
sure.
have. So somebody says here they co-signed for a grandchild. The grandchild is in default on the loan. They graduated from college, couldn't find a job. And now they're
right.
saying, can they take my Social Security check or maybe even my home? I think we answered that, but maybe we should talk about that again.
Well, if they're federal loans that they were co-signed on, then yes and yes are the answers to both those questions.
Oh my word!
If they were private loans, then at least your Social Security is safe. The private lenders cannot come after your Social Security income.
Now somebody here's another one. A for-profit school. The school went out of business,
right.
and this person borrowed money to go through the school. They never finished the school because the school went out of business.
Yeah.
And do they still have to pay the loans back? And
yeah.
And what about all of these for-profit schools you hear about?
You know,
there?
It's unconscionable. There and the nonprofits are pretty bad too. But the for-profits are just out the window ridiculous. I mean, they are doing things like recruiting people who never went to high school from homeless shelters and, you know, promising them, you know, you might get a little cash out of the deal with your refund check for student loans. And so it's just a horrible it's a meat grinder. It's a washing machine. It's a boiler room that is just words fail me, Jim. You know, in the case that your caller mentioned, what the schools do is they do, and they believe me, they file for bankruptcy themselves all the time. They pop up and they disappear after the loan checks are cleared. But they are always, 100% of the time, they are always in the event of a closing, always very careful to make sure that They satisfied the minimum fiduciary responsibilities in terms of student hours, classroom hours, you know, meted out to the students, et cetera, to make sure that the students have no recourse. And so, and it's
because you hear about like these schools where learn to be a truck driver or become
right.
a hairstylist, this kind of
right.
thing, and.
Right.
And they're charging, in some cases, there's one school here in Central Florida. Someone told me you go for 1 year and it's like $35,000 to become
yeah.
like a hairstylist. And I'm,
yeah.
And, but they'll make sure you can borrow all that money if you don't have it.
Oh, you know, they are very clever people. I think it's really the same group of people that go around the country and just repeat this thing. Because, I mean, literally, sometimes it's within, like, 1 hour of the minimal allowable credit hours given to the students. They cut it that close. In other words, they have to fulfill – they have to provide a certain number of credit hours, classroom hours, to the students – before the loan can be non-refundable. And so, you know, they have no scruples. And I'm talking primarily about the schools that you mentioned, the truck driving schools, the, you know, cosmetology schools, some culinary academies. But, you know, more and more often, this is actually happening with some non-profit, even four-year schools often. And, you know, and let's take an average example of, say, ITT Tech. I don't think they're going to be going out of business anytime soon, but, you know, I think the average indebtedness for not only ITT Tech, but even community colleges is about the same as indebtedness for people going to a four-year college per year. So ITT, for example, for a two-year degree, people are going to walk out of there with about $30,000 in student loans. And, you know, it's
And like you've been saying throughout the show, it's not just the $30,000, but the interest on top of that. And then if you get into all of those fees, so it's not
exactly.
just $30,000 we're talking about.
Yeah, the $30,000 walking out a couple of years, like literally 3 years later, could easily be $95,000 or $100,000.
Oh my
and remember,
goodness.
This is without bankruptcy protection. There is no recourse for the borrowers. And
someone is asking
you know,
here, is there an organization that you – can you go to an organization to complain, or who would you go to if you were being taken advantage of by a student loan company? And then they put in parentheses here, mediation, arbitration, Better Business Bureau. Any of that would be possible?
I'm actually really laughing because you're setting me up for to knock them down here. The Federal Department of Education Ombudsman's Office is the appropriate place to lodge complaints. You can lodge a complaint at the Better Business Bureau, but if you want to get action, you would want to call the Department of Education's Federal Ombudsman Office, and you can find that at their website. But here's the thing, Jim. It turns out, and this is a story that we broke, studentloanjustice.org broke a couple years ago. It turns out that the people manning the phones at the ombudsman office are actually working as contractors. They're actually getting their paychecks from a collection company. So this is an egregious conflict of interest. I mean, when the people that are supposed to be neutral, unbiased entities that help you resolve disputes with your lender or your collection company or whatever, if it turns out that they're actually on the payroll of the people who you're complaining about, you're not going to get very good service. And,
all right, somebody else is asking here, and that's shocking, and I'm sorry for skipping us along here. We're almost out of time.
No,
I want to get to a couple more of these. Somebody's asking about income-based repayment. And
yeah.
You know, this. I guess this is a new thing that was put in place
yep.
recently.
Yeah, this is.
Is that a good thing, and what is it?
Well, this is a lot like the public service loan forgiveness that I talked about earlier. The difference is the term of the loan now is 20 years, not 10 years, as for the public service forgiveness package. And the kicker there also is that the amount that is forgiven at the end of the 20-year term and again, assuming that you make it that far and you don't get tricked or otherwise kicked out of the program before the 20-year term is up, all the debt that is forgiven is treated as income for the purposes of income tax. And so,
you got to pay income taxes on the debt that's forgiven at the end of that. I did not know that. That is shocking.
No, yeah, that's exactly right. So if you leave school with $100,000 and you sign up for this program and you don't make a lot of money during the term, at the end of the 20 years, the balance continues to accrue. Interest continues to accrue. Your balance is going to be $225,000. And so what's the tax on that? Well, it's probably
your income tax, maybe 40 or 50. Yeah, at least
50,000. It's a huge amount of money, and that's payable usually within one calendar year.
I'm going to hit you with the final question here, and
sure.
I wish I could. I mean, everything you've said tonight is shocking, and I just don't know why this information is not getting out there. But here's the final question. Someone is asking, what is the best way to go to college without taking loans? And we've always said to people, live at home. Go to the local community college, take 6 years, whatever, 7 years, work at the same time, pay cash, just don't borrow money. Just like how do you buy a car without a loan? You save up and you buy a car. I mean, do you have any other more astute advice than that?
Unfortunately, you're preaching to the choir there, Jim. My first piece of advice to students is, and I'm serious about this, don't borrow. Do not borrow. Set that as a standard and work your way around it from there. I think particularly given the horrible characteristics of these the lending system, be happy. Don't borrow. Trust me. Go to a community college.
Well, and what I heard when you were on Coast to Coast with Ian Punnett, he had quoted a statistic that one-third of the Fortune 500 CEOs never went to college or never finished college, I think was the actual statistic. So you see the folks like the Bill Gates and different people out there. And a lot of people, too, are taking these different paths. Like one of my friends, he became a respiratory therapist. He never went to college, but he goes to college now for the first time. He's in his 40s, and he only has to go for 18 months, and he gets this credential to do this medical work, and he's making a huge income. And as he described it to me, he said, I wear a white coat like the doctors, and I have a stethoscope. People think I'm a doctor in the hospital as I'm walking around, that I make as much money as they do. So there's this whole new economy where people have all these different, new ways of making money, like going to school for 6 months just at a local adult education to learn how to, repair computers and, get out there and do things like that. So a lot of different things going on. Let's take our last minute or two, though, and let you do some shameless self-promotion. So tell us all about your book and your website and how people can get in touch with you. And I guess they can donate if they want to help you out or share with us all that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, the website is studentloanjustice.org. And you can see the book and all the relevant media and all the stories, all the research we've done, the stories that we've broken and the successes we've had politically there. We were actually given credit as being the inspiration for what was called the Student Borrower Bill of Rights Act of 2007, introduced by Hillary Clinton, introduced a second time, and hopefully it will be introduced again this session. And our only focus, really, is the return of standard bankruptcy protections to all student loans. We see this as pretty much a no-brainer that both the Democrats and the Republicans have to admit is just inexcusable. And so that's what we do. This is a grassroots movement, and we depend hugely on the people to take leadership positions and, get out and lead their own local communities with their own local elected officials. And so I would urge anybody who is in deep trouble with your loans, don't go to these credit counselors that promise you the sun and the moon, and then, you wind up far, far worse for the wear. Try to change the problem. Try to solve the problem with us. Because this is an easy problem to solve if a lot of people put a minimal amount of effort into it.
We're out of time. I want to thank you for joining us. His website is studentloanjustice.org, justice.org. His book is at Amazon. I'm looking at it right now on Amazon.com. It's called The Student Loan Scam. Alan Collins of Student Loan Justice, thank you so much for joining us. Fantastic interview. And you hear only those kinds of things right here on Jim Paris Live. So don't miss the program. We'll be back with you next week. This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. Talk to you next time.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective.